I do enjoy the style of the workshop. I think it's very, very productive. It's not that I understand everything that these theoretical people say, but okay, thank you. So this is a work made in Erlangen, and most people are from the group of Ulrik Andersen, the division headed by Gerd Lewis. And except these, Christoph Marquardt, Joe Herzing, Ruth Van Dong. There are Andrei Klimov from University of Guadalajara and Luis Sanchez Soto from the University of Madrid. And later I will show some amendments made by our collaborators from Olomouc as well. Okay, so this is the outline of my talk. First of all, I will tell you some well-known things. I'm sorry for that, but maybe for consistency, I think I should speak a little bit about this, about how polarization of light is described in quantum optics and what is polarization tomography in the canonical, well, in the traditional meaning, which I would like to call classical tomography if it were classical quantum tomography, but it sounds a little bit funny. Yes? So this is homodyne tomography. And then I will describe an experiment we made on characterizing Kerr-squeezed polarization-squeezed light produced through Kerr nonlinearity in a polarization-maintaining fiber, and how we managed to reconstruct the quantum state. And then finally, I will give a little bit information about what we are planning, what we are doing actually now. And this is a reference to a paper. I'm sorry, it's not very new. It was even mentioned yesterday, to my greatest pleasure. So this is the paper where it's most of all it's written. Okay, so in classical optics, starting from 1852, we have Stokes parameters, which is this is an instrument for describing polarization of light. And in fact, it describes the outcome of a very simple measurement with a setup shown here. This is a polarization beam splitter, two detectors, and one should measure the difference photocurrent of these detectors. So the zero, the difference of the sum photocurrent, the zero Stokes parameter is the sum of the intensities. And then the first, the second, and the third Stokes parameters are given by the difference of the intensities, difference of the photocurrents, but change from S1 to S2 is made by rotating the polarizing beam splitter, so by changing the frame of reference, or by adding a quarter wave plate, you can pass to measuring the third Stokes parameter. So you switch between the bases. Okay, quite straightforwardly, in quantum optics, intensities are changed to photon number operators, and then everything remains the same. And then a little bit more complicated, one can introduce a vector, a unit vector, in the space S1, S2, S3, and then the inner product of this vector with the vector operator given by these three operators gives us the operator which I will call a generalized Stokes operator, or the corresponding variable will be called the Stokes variable. It is given by two angles in the spherical coordinates. And then, of course, it is important to speak about Stokes space and not a sphere, because I want to mention that at least in our experiment and in many other experiments, the total number of photons fluctuates. So the light cannot be considered as a system with a fixed spin. Like people who work with qubits, for instance, they plot the polarization on the Poincaré sphere, because they basically work with single photon state. Then people who work with two photon states, they can draw different spheres and speak of spin one particles. Yeah, but here the spin is not fixed. Fluctuates. S0 fluctuates as well. And that's why things that I will show will not be placed on a sphere, but in a space. And so we have the commutation relations between the Stokes operators. And because of these commutation relations, we have uncertainty relations. So the product, yeah.
Really good point about the Stokes space. I'm wondering, can I think of this as sort of a set of concentric spheres.
Exactly. One of my colleagues likes to speak about an onion with layers.
So it's onion.
So the product of the variances is restricted by the mean value of the third parameter, Stokes parameter. And there is a concept of polarization squeezing. So whenever one manages to make one variance less than the mean value of one of the Stokes parameters, then naturally the other variance, the variance of the third Stokes parameter, becomes larger, and one speaks of polarization squeezing. Okay, I can still draw a sphere just to show the direction in the Stokes space, and this is the direction in which the Stokes observable will be measured, but the figure on the sphere will be something like this. I tried to show something with unequal variances. So what I basically showed here, I showed some object, so that the some figure, the gravity center of this, the center of gravity of this figure, denotes the mean Stokes parameters, the mean values of all Stokes variables. But the size of this figure gives the variances in all directions. I hope it is clear. Okay, and the typical points on the sphere are horizontally polarized, vertically polarized, and minus 45 degree, 45 degree linear polarized, right and left polarized, completely the same way as people discussed yesterday. Okay, the question is, can we measure more than just the Stokes parameters, so the mean values of the Stokes observables and the variances? And here I just give a brief description of the traditional quantum tomography, which can be called also Wigner function tomography or homodyne tomography. And it is, in fact, it is mathematically equivalent, completely equivalent to usual tomography, usual optical tomography. In short, if you are given a function of two variables, and in quantum tomography it's usually a Wigner function, and we know the projections in all directions of this function, what are the projections? For instance, I pick a unit vector, and phi is the angle, and I pick the direction, denotes this coordinate like x, phi, and I slice the function orthogonally to this direction. And then the integral of each slice, the area of each slice, I plot here versus this coordinate x, phi. And the histogram of this distribution, I will call it a tomogram, and it is quite straightforwardly written here. This is the expression for the tomogram through the initial function, two-dimensional function, function of two coordinates. But the inverse transformation is a little bit more involved. It's called inverse random transform, and it's more or less it's a software that you can buy, so it's a known thing. But the new thing, understood in 93, quite a long time ago, was that when one makes the homodyne detection, homodyne measurement, so the unknown light is mixed with a local oscillator, a bright, very bright laser beam, and then at the output one measures the difference photocurrent of two detectors, then the histogram of this measurement gives this P of X function, and phi can be changed by changing the phase of the local oscillator. And then by doing the inverse random transform known from classical optics, one can restore the Wigner function. The question is, can we do it for polarization variables? And again, I will refer to a quite old paper. So the concept of polarization tomography, as I'm going to describe it, was formulated in this paper made in Lebedev Institute in Moscow, in the group of Masalov, and the main theoretical contribution was by Karasev in 2001. And the idea is exactly the same, only in the three-dimensional space. So suppose we are given some quasi-probability function, and I will not now specify which is the quasi-probability function. All that I want from this function is that it should allow us to calculate all quantum observables of any, I would say, moments of any Stokes variable. So I can write. So I want to calculate, for instance, S of theta phi to the power of m average, like this kind of moment. And this, I want this to be made with this quasi-probability function by just integrating this variable with the quasi-probability. And then, just from this fact, it follows that doing the same Stokes measurement as I described, with a beam splitter, with a different photocurrent measurement, but only by plotting not just the variance and the mean value, but by plotting the histogram of the result of the measurement, one makes the following. The distribution of this quasi probability in the three-dimensional Stokes space is sliced normally to some direction given by theta and phi. And the area of each slice is plotted versus the corresponding coordinate. So it's exactly the same. And the question was just about how to restore this function from the histogram or from the tomogram, as we call it, the reconstruction. And the recipe was also given in that paper, which I will discuss later. OK. And now the experiment we made. So the object of our measurement was a polarization squeezed light, which was produced in a fiber with birefringence. Such fibers are called polarization maintaining because indeed they maintain, they keep polarization. It was described in the preparation of this light was described in this paper. So the idea is very simple. If we have two polarization modes of the fiber, and they are independent, they don't have crosstalk between them, and we make, through the Kernel linearity, we make quadrature squeezing in each of the polarization modes. And similarly to what happens to photons, when we have a pair polarized vertically, a pair polarized horizontally, then due to the interference, you produce orthogonally polarized pairs, right? There were some talks about it. Yesterday, I think, before yesterday. So the same way here, provided you have a quadrature squeezed light in vertical polarization and quadrature squeezed light in the horizontal polarization, you have polarization squeezed light. So fluctuations are simultaneous. Intensity fluctuations are completely correlated in two polarization modes. That's the point. And the measurement setup is as described. A half wave plate and a quarter wave plate to specify certain Stokes measurement, a polarizing beam splitter, two detectors, and the difference photocurrent subtraction. We had a special setup to compensate for the delay between the vertical and horizontal polarization because due to the birefringence, the pulses are separated in time, and this has to be pre-compensated as well. We have to keep the phase between them fixed because the output polarization should be constant. And in fact, we prepared something localized on the north pole of the Poincaré sphere. The light was squeezed almost along the S1 direction and anti-squeezed to a large extent along the S2 direction. That was because of the so-called GOBS, guided acoustic wave brilouin scattering. This is some noise introduced by the fiber. It increases this variance in this direction. So an important thing is that our detectors had two outputs, the DC output and the AC output. The AC output only reflected the fluctuations, and the DC output only reflected the mean intensity. We treated this data separately. From the AC output, we measured the histogram of the distribution of the difference photocurrent, and the DC output was used to know where our point was, where our object was on the Poincaré sphere. Sorry?
Where was the roll-off?
Roll-off?
Where did the AC filter?
Ah, the AC, okay. The AC was filtered at 17 megahertz. It is because we had, the laser had a repetition rate of 163 megahertz. It was a pulse laser. Here, I give the data about the pulses. We needed to filter out frequency that was different from the repetition rate of the laser. We had a window of about a couple of megahertz, around 17 megahertz. So this is all about the experiment and now about the reconstruction. There are There were two ways suggested. The first way was described in the paper by Karasev and Masalov. It was actually reconstructing a quasi probability that was introduced in the paper of Kurt Bernard Wolf in 96 and called Wigner function. But theorists still, I think, didn't agree about whether this Wigner function is good or bad, whether it is Wigner function or not Wigner function. I just give the definition, you decide whether it's good or bad. So it is defined through the characteristic function, which is given here. S is the Stokes vector operator, which I introduced. And then this Wigner function is just a Fourier transform of this characteristic function. Mathematical classical Fourier transform. Then the reconstruction formula is given here, and this is the special case for a large number of photons. S0 is of course the number of photons, and it should be large to eliminate some summation, to switch from summation to integration. And the resulting formula is given here. So it's from this paper. Then the participants okay, and what it means. This is the tomogram. It means that you have to take the second derivative of the tomogram, and with this condition and with this integration, it means that you just take this tomogram and put it at a particular point. Okay, so but this is from the viewpoint of experiment, this is not very nice because the experimental distribution being twice differentiated may look ugly. But in our case, all tomograms were very nice Gaussians. Just we got it like this. And it was easy. We could simulate it with Gaussians and then differentiate. It was one approach. Okay, so Luis Sanchez-Soto and Andrei Klimov came up with a slightly different reconstruction formula, which was made for the Q function. The Q function is defined like this. So it is defined for a, as they say, subspace, for a single sphere, for single onion shell, onion skin, yeah, and then in the case again, in the case of large photon number, the reconstruction formula looks like this, and it is different. It differs from the previous formula only by this factor, which is basically a constant in our case. In our case, the S0 was about 10^+9, the number of photons, and it is of course much larger than the unity. Yeah, this Q function should be strictly positive, exactly.
But then you're okay, but then in this limit, your Wigner function is also strictly positive. But
I heard that this Wigner function may be singular, but this particular, and that's why they don't want to call it a Wigner function. But I'm not a theorist, so I probably shouldn't be asked this. Okay, and so. But in this limit, you see they coincide, and they should be positive. Okay. And also an interesting fact that this reconstruction formula exactly coincides with the classical three-dimensional tomography formula, which you still find in some papers. Mostly when people do tomography, like tomography of the head, for instance, they slice the object. I mean, they do it in slices. But in principle, there exist three-dimensional reconstruction formulas for some areas, for some applications, and it completely coincides with this. Okay. And now the results. So this was our object. This is what we obtained in the three-dimensional picture. The three projections here show the projections to S1, S3, S1, S2, and S3 planes. And probably you can see that there are some negativities here, which shouldn't be there. So the ripples, which is the usual case when one makes the inverse Fresnel transform, of course, because it is not assumed that the condition of positivity is doesn't play any role in the inverse Fresnel transform. And just to show projections separately, I can show that the state was indeed squeezed in S1 direction, And for comparison, the blue circle shows the coherent state, which we also studied. We prepared the same the state with the same number of photons, but not faster than 5 R, and it was a coherent state. So it looks like a ball on this Poincaré. In this Poincaré Stokes space, and here it looks like a circle. So you see that in the S1 direction, this circle is larger than what we obtained for our light, and in S2 space, it's much, our state is much anti-squeezed due to this noise, gulps. And also in the S3 direction, for some reason, our state is also a little bit anti-squeezed, which shouldn't be, because the kernel linearity should not change the number of photons, should not introduce the amplitude noise. It should only introduce the phase noise. Okay. So we got, from this reconstruction, we got 6.2 dB squeezing, and then much larger anti-squeezing, as we expected. Okay, so a little bit of what we are going to do. We are going to go from this macroscopic scale to the microscopic scale. We are going to prepare squeezed vacuum instead of squeezed bright coherent state, which means that we want to prepare a state for which this object, this Wigner function or whatever, is localized around the center of the Poincaré sphere. Around the center of the space, Stokes space, which doesn't mean that the number of photons will be small. The number of photons will be large, but the light will not be polarized in the usual sense. I mean, all Stokes parameters will be zero as a first step. How we make it? Well, the easiest way is to use a Ki2 crystal and to produce twin beams. In type 2 twin beams, then after a polarizing beam splitter, we put two detectors and the fluctuations are exactly the same. So the measuring difference photocurrent will give not only average mean photocurrent, but zero mean photocurrent, but also zero variance of the photocurrent. That's the known technique. And then this state gives suppressed fluctuations in the S1 Stokes parameter. But then making this setup a little bit more complicated, using two crystals, two type 1 crystals with orthogonal axis, one can prepare a state that has suppressed fluctuations in S2, right? But then changing the polarization of the pump, instead of producing pairs with diagonal polarizations, we can produce pairs with circular polarizations, and then the state will be suppressed in will be squeezed in S3. And then by adding coherent light, the squeezing, the object here, the Wigner function distribution or whatever, will move towards S3 coordinate, for instance, in this particular case. And there will be non-zero Stokes parameters. So we want to make some set of tools based on this scheme. Okay, and then some latest news, some amendment by our colleagues from Olomouc, Zdeněk Radl and Jarda Rychaček. So they helped us to eliminate the problem of negativities. I showed that the restored Wigner function, Q function to be precise, had negative ripples. And the solution is the maximum likelihood approach, which was described yesterday by Zdeněk. And of course, in this approach, you assume that the restored function is good physically. It's good. This way, it was possible to eliminate these ripples. So first, I show you what we got before. Unfortunately, so far, the results only relate to the so-called dark plane. Sorry for this term. Don't be scared by this term. Dark plane, we say. As I described, we have a three-dimensional Stokes space, but all interesting things. Just a moment. Yeah, so you see this figure here lives on the North Pole. But all interesting details are in the S1, S2 space, squeezing and unsqueezing. So it is, in fact, it is convenient to integrate everything over S3 coordinate. In S3 coordinate, and then we go to the so-called dark plane, and the reconstruction there is completely identical to the usual Wigner function reconstruction, to the two-dimensional Wigner function reconstruction. So this is what we kept obtaining before we used, before the maximum likelihood approach was used. So this was the what the two-dimensional inverse Radon transform gave. And you see there are some blue ripples here, which is negativities. This is fluid state. This is coherent state. And this is what the maximum likelihood approach gave. So you see a nice peak, no ripples. This is coherent state for just to see it more clearly. This is the projection on the S1, S2 plane. And finally, this is the squeeze state in the three-dimensional picture and on the as a projection on S1, S2 plane. So you see it, there are no ripples. Okay, so conclusions. So I think we have performed full polarization tomography of an infant's squeeze state generated through pseudo-order nonlinearity in a PM fiber. And then in this macroscopic limit, the reconstruction of Q and W functions coincide. So there is nothing very much interesting. But the interesting thing is what happens when we go to lower photon numbers and to the situation where the variances become comparable with S0, for instance, or when the photon numbers become small, really small. So according to this, we plan, and we are actually trying to make some experiment now based on squeeze vacuum preparation. Thank you.
Yeah. Going back to the last part of your talk, and to the ripples of the Wigner Q function. Well, in theory, Q function is non-negative everywhere. And here, since you observe those systems, I wonder, is it somehow effect of your experiment or rather of the way you treat the data from Fourier inverse Fourier?
I think it's the way we treated the data, because the same, exactly the same ripples were obtained in the famous paper by Raymer, which I cited. They did the
theoreticians, it's natural to believe that Q function is everywhere positive, but
well,
in real life, maybe it's not the case.
I think it's an artifact. I think my answer was a little bit wrong, because if our experiment gave us precise, really precise data, we wouldn't get ripples.
Okay,
so
it's like artifact.
It's an artifact. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
So this is a question that, in some sense, I'm using your work as a proxy for many experiments. It's sort of a general question. When you produce a quantum state and then make many measurements on it and make an estimate of what that state is, and of course, a state is it's a tool we use for predicting what will happen when we use this for something.
Okay.
So I come up with a state estimate, and I can make a pretty picture, and I can publish it in a paper. But ideally, I want to know that really tells me about the state. And so I would want to test that, test my estimate by seeing whether it does the right thing. Do you guys have any protocol for doing that, for saying, yes, this is the right state?
Not yet, but I think a protocol would be to check this thing, just exactly this thing. And in principle, one can measure the moments rather easily by doing the same experiment. But we haven't done this so far. We haven't developed any protocols. This is just the idea of how we can check, to check whether the moments or the observable value agree with the moments calculated mathematically from the distribution you think. This activity is just at the beginning, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Questions?
It's much Amira's question. People are more and more interested in non-Gaussian states, and for sure that from the kernel linearity, the non-Gaussian states could come more or less for free. But everything, of course, depends on the energy, because in principle one should see the bending of this. And my question is: do you see? Is it realistic to think about such energies where this bending could be, in principle, observable? Because this, I think, would be really interesting for the people. Information technologies to do something, let's say, non-Gaussian
Okay, well, personally, I didn't calculate such things, but I heard a talk.
The parameter which is responsible for the Gaussianity here, in my understanding, is this as a zero component in the 10 in the power of 7 or something like that. So the question is how.
Oh, nonlinearity. Well,
nonlinearity is always there, but if the energy is too high, in my opinion, you cannot see the difference between this crescent shape and the typical squeezed ellipse. Is it so?
No, I think, well, first of all, about how probable it is to see the crescent shape,
yeah.
Because I heard a talk where it was estimated that to have really a crescent shape instead of a ellipse.
But did they estimate it from the data?
We need a fiber that can be wrapped around the Earth.
Ah.
So this interaction is really rather weak. And just the length of the fiber.
It's the interplay between the strength of the nonlinearity
and the energy in the pulse. Yeah. But
the question, let's say, realistic question is: if it's your nonlinearity, if it's your length of the fiber, what would be the energy for which will?
This is far from being non-Gaussian. This is pretty Gaussian, and the energy. Well, it's a good question for a theorist, but we'll burn the fiber.
But somehow the energy. I think we will go close to the origin, and we could see something like.
Well, to go to the origin, it in principle, what happens here is it's a superposition of. This figure on the north pole of the Poincaré sphere can be represented as a coherent light
mm-hmm.
and some weak component, which is basically the squeezed vacuum. Doesn't work. Okay, I mean that this thing, if we displace it somehow to the center of the coordinate, it's possible. It's squeezed vacuum. But one can separate because in principle it is generated not exactly as the pump wave, but it's sidebands. So in principle it is possible, but even so, the shape is not non-Gaussian. It's theoretically it should be Gaussian. Unfortunately, I don't know so far the recipe to make it non-Gaussian with this nonlinearity.
So
thank you again.